And then there were four. The semis are set at the Gold Cup as both the United States and Mexico take care of business in the quarterfinals. Is a Nations League rematch looming later this week in Las Vegas. After a shocking loss to start their Olympic campaign, the U.S. women fired back with a six-pack against New Zealand. We'll break that down, as well as a rough Sunday out for the Mexican men who fell flat against the tourney host. Plus, what in the name of pop culture? Kanye West at an Atlanta United game?
That's Yeezy! That's him!
Football America is underway and together in our Los Angeles
this is
studio.
Insane. You're here.
I am. Am I taller in person? Come on. He's Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebi Salazar. We got a lot to get to in this show. We got some great guests lined up for you. We're going to hear from Ali Krieger in a little bit, talking about the U.S. women's national team at the Olympics. We got to discuss the start of the Liga MX season, some interesting results from week one down there, plus another young superstar with a hat trick in Major League Soccer. But Hercules, I think we got to start, as we often do, with the Gold Cup. Because it is Gold Cup right now, and we are getting down to the brass tacks of this tournament, down to the semifinals. The U.S. into the semis after a 1-0 victory over Jamaica in the quarterfinals Sunday in Arlington, Texas. The goal, we had to wait for it. Oh, we had to wait a really, really long time until the 83rd minute. That's when Matthew Hoppe scored. Herc, you called this a trap game leading into this. And early on, especially in the first half, it felt like Jamaica was going to do exactly that, trap the U.S. In this quarterfinal. In the end, they get the job done, but just, and I mean just barely.
I mean, it wasn't pretty, was it? And listen, I said it was a trap game. In the first 15, 20 seconds, they almost proved me right.
Yep.
Very nervy moments for this very young and inexperienced U.S. men's national team. But we expected that, right? 12 of these players had never had a single minute leading up to this Gold Cup with the national team.
So it's a good performance then?
It's a win. Good performance, choppy, sloppy. In the end, they did what they needed to do. A better second half than first half. A lot of mistakes. No fluidity to the game, especially in the final third. The buildup was lacking. But in the end, you needed to win. And again, it's a 1-0 win. And good teams will find ways to win. This is a very young team. And yes, this was a big win for them.
You feel like it was a story of two different halves, because it's not just the first opportunity for Bobby Reed. Matt Turner was really busy in that first 45. I don't know if it was four or five saves that he had to make in the first half. Something changed in the second half. Did you pick up on what it was?
The midfield, I thought Kellen Acosta was very, very good. The midfield play was better. Possession was better. They didn't lose the ball so cheaply. Greg's timely substitutions definitely helped out the U.S. men's national team. And at the end of it was, you know, applying pressure and getting the goal. Goals will kill you. And right before Matthew Hoppe scores the goal, there's a chance for the Jamaican national team. I'm talking about right before.
Right, right.
A dead ball situation across the face of the box that Matt Turner's already beat. The defender's already beat. The Jamaican attacker can't get there. Inches from actually connecting. And if he connects any part of his foot to the ball, it trickles in an empty net.
Mm. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, contextually, this is a very, very good result. Jamaica's got their A-team. Mm-hmm. Just like Canada pretty much had their A-team, missing a few pieces. None of these guys are really A-team material, right? On this U.S. team, are we comfortable saying that? Like starting 11 material.
I would say situational. There were a few, and I will tell you why. There are a few defenders that showed me something last night.
But the point remains. It's basically not your A team.
Of
and you're
course.
Getting results in a
not
knockout
your a,
round.
Not probably not even your B. You're going down to the C team.
And you're Absolutely. Getting results in a knockout round against decent competition. You got it in the group phase against Canada. You got it against Jamaica here. One thing that I do want to point out, though, is the goals. There is a lack of goals outside of Martinique, right, which
right.
is your 6-1. Every other game so far has been 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. That says to me you're not creating enough goals. Is the U.S. though creating enough chances? Because that's what we see with Mexico. We see overwhelming chances but no goals. So you say, oh, well, eventually they're going to start scoring.
Do
you feel the same way about the U.S.?
No, I don't. With the exception of the Haiti game, which I thought the finishing wasn't on par, they created some decent opportunities. It just they didn't finish. Now, every single game after that, Martinique was Martinique.
Yeah, we'll throw that out.
But Canada, I mean, besides the opening, what would you say, 15 minutes?
Yep.
It was all Canada after that. It was a U.S. men's national team that really struggled with fluidity in attacking third, to connect passes, to move it side to side, to create lanes for each other, to create any
Is
concrete
most of that
scoring
just
opportunities.
Dudes not playing together? Dudes just not
yes.
having played together?
Yes, most of that can be people not playing together, not knowing, or not having that familiarity. But it's also construction of this roster.
You go
from what is a 4-3-3 to all of a sudden a 3-5-2, and you keep changing things up, changing personnel up, different players in different positions that maybe they're not used to playing. So it's a combination of those things.
It really is, and I've said this throughout this tournament, hard to like judge on the collective what this group is doing just based on how little they've played together. But individually, there's a lot on the line. So let's go through some of the players, some of the guys who had performances last night, whether you thought they were good, whether you thought they were bad. We'll put them into two categories. Very simple, Herc, even for you. Who played well, who didn't? Let's start with Matthew Hoppe. Let's start with Matthew Hoppe, because I think he's the name that's jumping off the screen for most players. He gets the goal, 83rd minute. He gets subbed off almost immediately afterwards in the 84th minute. Really, of the two categories, you can only put him in one, right?
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
He was really good. He's 20 years old, and what I most like about him is how dangerous he is, how vertical he is. He never plays it safe. He never wants to just be easy in possession. He's always looking to be vertical, to attack, to be goal dangerous. And his movement is fantastic.
Is there a comp there for you? Because when I see him, there are two names that immediately jump into my head. Any for you?
You know, we had this conversation last night. You came over, you watched the game. I in a very egotistical way, compared him to what I look like, what I wanted to be
a
like.
A young Hercules Gomez. He said that at his house last night. He said it in the third person.
What I wanted to be like when I was playing, always goal dangerous.
Right.
You know, my attributes were my movement, were being goal dangerous, were being vertical. And he's like that. You mentioned Chris Wondolowski, which I think is a fair comparison because he's got such great instinct to find the play. He's also deceivingly big.
Yeah.
He's 6'3". He's 20 years old, 6'3", and he moves like that.
Is 6'3" deceptively large? That's very tall to me.
You're 5'6".
I mean, that's what I'm saying. To me, it sounds very tall.
No, but for a forward, especially when you see him on the field, you see the way he moves, you don't expect him to be that nimble for that size. Mm-hmm. And he's just so dangerous. Honestly, he's a player that every time I watch shows me a different facet of his game. And listen, like every player on this list, when they show you something, it's either good or bad, but they show you something. So far with him, it's been good, but it's the hunger in that game that really strikes me.
So beyond the Wando comparison, I compare him to Wando because he always puts the ball on target. He's always going to make the goalie work. That's, I think, Wando's specialty. It's why he's gotten a lot of goals in Major League Soccer. The other comparison that to me is very, very obvious is Chicharito. I mean, it's the movements off the ball. It's like he's always seems to be almost gambling on what's to come.
Yeah,
I see what Chicharito, like Chicharito's always like, the ball could be here.
Listen, it's fair.
And that's Hoppe.
It's fair because if you compare Chicharito to Wando, you're like very similar in their movements, how they find the ball. But Matthew Hoppe, and I say this with all due respect to those two, has a certain style to the ball on his foot. He likes to run at people. For as big and as nimble, for as big as he is, strong as he is very nimble with the ball on his foot. When he's going to goal, he still, I don't think, is as good as maybe many think he is in reduced spaces, but he's very good with open space. And Javier Hernandez and Chris Wondolowski are certainly not that.
All right, fair enough. Does he got to leave Schalke?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw
get him out of Bundesliga.
That, right?
Get him out of Bundesliga too.
Yeah,
and that'll happen. And I think if you watch or if you've been looking at the social media channels for Schalke, they want that to happen as well. They are pumping a transfer for him as we speak.
Absolutely. All right. The other side of the number nine story, at least in this match, is Daryl Dike. He gets pulled in the 63rd minute. Could not find the back of the net. I'm guessing, Herc, he's not going to end up in your played well column.
No, and this is a rough one because Daryl Dike's got so much promise. Got all the intangibles, right? I mean, physically, he's such a handful. He's opportunistic. He's a guy that showed you he could score different types of goals. He lit it up in Major League Soccer. They put a $20 million transfer fee on him, on his head. He goes to the championship, and he lights it up there for Barnsley. But after these two last opponents, Canada and what is Jamaica, if I'm teams around the championship, around the Premier League, and I see $20 million price tag on his head after what he's played, I'm scoffing at it. There's no chance I'm paying that. There seems to be a breakdown between the U.S. men's national team midfield and the attack once it gets, in these last two games, once it got to Daryl Dike. Whether it was his back to goal and his touches or his decision making, it was lacking. And at this level, I don't care what he does against Haiti or Martinique. I want to see what he does against the elite at CONCACAF. I'm not even asking for a Germany, a Brazil, an Argentina, those type of teams like Spain. I'm talking about CONCACAF, that elite type level. And the last two games, he was a player I was disappointed in.
Yeah, he scored twice against Martinique. So, you know, you get your goals there, but he gets the starts against Canada, Jamaica, and doesn't score in either match, right? Those are the big opportunities that he's got to grab. I think he's a streaky scorer. Yeah. I think what we saw at Barnsley is a guy that can catch fire and maybe a guy who will go cold for a while. That's certainly something you can grow out of, though, right?
But when you're not scoring goals, how are you helping your team? And it was evident there was a breakdown in play when it got to Daryl Dike.
Right. You always want that number nine that when he's not scoring, like, does all the other little things.
Correct.
I'm sure Dike can add that to his game. All right, let's go to another player here, Kellen Acosta. This is a guy who, for me, is so interesting because, one, he's super versatile.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like, I don't really know if he's an 11 guy or an 18 guy or a 23 guy for the next World Cup. Where do you see him fitting in big picture, and then what do you make of his performance against Jamaica?
Big picture, he's fighting for a spot in this 23 to go to Qatar.
You think he's still fighting for the spot? Oh. You don't think he's a lock?
No. I don't think he's a lock because it's a very crowded midfield. Here's the thing. People forget about Kellen Acosta and who he was at FC Dallas. He was the next big thing. He was about to explode. He signs for Colorado, and all of a sudden, things start changing. The last games what we saw in Europe, when they played against Jamaica in what was Austria, and then they played against Northern Ireland, he was a scapegoat for fans. He was a player who was still in preseason that Greg Berhalter decided to start in these two games, and he struggled. He wasn't up to par with the rhythm because he hadn't been playing. So it was very down in a lot of the minds and hearts of these U.S. men's national team fans and maybe
MLS
pundits.
MLS thing
for sure, for sure.
For sure, we talk about that.
But if anybody has vindicated themselves lately in this Gold Cup, it is Kellen Acosta. He was an absolute, as Greg Berhalter said, beast for them in the center of the park. He's a player that's a dual threat, box to box. And one of the only players with some actual defensive bite to his game. I thought he was superb. He was a player that I was happy for him to watch him to go from being down here in those European friendlies to up here in Gold Cup. I thought he got himself back into that to those 23-man picture.
So he starts in midfield alongside Sebastian Legette and Gianluca Busio. Let's go Busio. How do you think he performed against Jamaica?
That's the second straight game that Busio, I think, has struggled the physicality at this level.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a physical thing with him.
When
huh?
I say physicality, I don't just mean the size of Gianluca Busio. Mm-hmm. I don't just mean his ability to win a ball in defense. I'm talking about the speed of play. I'm talking about the speed.
That's what I would thought wouldn't be a problem for him.
And that's been a problem for him. He hasn't been fast enough in his decision-making, defensively and offensively. There have been moments where I'm like, I like what I see out of this kid. He's 18 years old. You know, he's a teenager. I'm liking what I'm seeing. And other moments where I'm like, the game's still a little fast for him right now. And maybe a lot of that is the chaos that is CONCACAF and the chaos that is being with a C team that's never played together. Maybe he's better in a much more well-rounded setting where he can be better for you. But he's another player like DK that, I've come away the last two games and I wish he would have done more.
And those are the two games since the reports of the move to Venezia. I wonder if that's like a distraction for these guys. I'm not saying, is it an excuse, but kind of like, is it an excuse?
Listen, man, when I was 18, 19 years old, if I didn't take a midday nap, it ruined my day, ruined my week. You know, I could only imagine if all of a sudden you're reading things about yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it used to be back in the day, big soccer, and you'd have to go to a forum to, you know, like deep,
this
like
kid opens
dark
his
web.
Phone, and it must be boop, 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 boop.
It opens his phone, and he's got, you know, thousands of mentions, and he's got reports in Italy, and he's got probably family members, and he's got all these things. He's reading about himself and all these different types of outlets. It could be very overwhelming, I am sure. And how you deal with that, because this isn't a proper soccer culture, a football culture.
Right.
I mean, anywhere else in the world, he could read about himself in the paper.
Yeah.
You walk out.
This is
paparazzi.
New for him, you're saying.
This
basically.
Is very new for him. In Kansas City, he probably doesn't get this type of attention, like at a world level. And now he's starting to read, and maybe he's buying, I don't want to say buying it a little into it, but it could definitely be affecting him.
He didn't start the first game of the group phase. He has started the three games since. So I wonder if even if he's not playing as well as you'd like or others might like, if still his stock is at least holding firm with Greg Berhalter. Because it seems like he keeps going back to him, even if the performances aren't necessarily what you want to see.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's evident, right? Yeah. Greg Berhalter's given that opportunity. And maybe if there's a positive to come out of this C-team type Gold Cup, it's that Greg Berhalter's getting a lot of these questions answered with these young players. If you're looking for depth and who could potentially come into that 23-man roster for Qatar, well, this is a great opportunity for those domestic players and also a platform. And Gianluca Busio is one of those players who's looking for that platform for that transfer.
All right, so the U.S. played on Sunday. Mexico, meanwhile, played on Saturday against Honduras in Glendale, Arizona. And Herc, the Mexican national team decided to show up to the Gold Cup. Finally, the real Mexican national team. They went 3-0 over Honduras. All three goals, Herc, come in a 12-minute stretch in the first half. Rogelio Funes Mori, Jonathan Dos Santos with a beautiful volley, and Orbelin as well. I think, and I don't even think it's really close, this was by far Mexico's best performance of the tournament.
You know, I've been hearing a lot about that. I've been hearing this is their best performance.
How can you argue it?
Well, it's 3-0 against Honduras and a very depleted Honduras team at that.
And 3-0 in the first half.
But yes.
Contundente. Convincing.
But you know the only difference between Trinidad, between Guatemala, between El Salvador and this game? They finished. You look at the possession
in
those
difference.
Games. Yes.
A pretty big difference.
Yes, but the play. But the play in between the boxes. There's still a team that's been dominant in every single game, with the exception of probably 30 minutes versus El Salvador. This team dominated every single game, every single moment of every single match. And I'm talking about, like, dominated. 82% possession against Trinidad. 72% possession against Guatemala. 54 against El Salvador. 30 shots one game. 17 the next. 16 that game. They just finished this game. That was the only difference. Zero goals against the whole tournament.
Let me ask you this. So the goal comes from Funes Mori in the 26th minute. Before that, there were like 3 or 4 very good chances for Mexico. Tell me, as they're missing those chances, you're not thinking, here we go, more of the same. Because through that first half hour, until Funes Mori gets that goal, I'm thinking this is the exact same Mexican team I've seen through the group phase.
Yeah, and it's that old saying that you hear Mexican fans say all the time. Jugamos como nunca, perdimos como siempre. Yep. You know, we
play like never before, lose like always before.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, it seems to be just ingrained in the way they think when they see this happen, that it's going to happen. You know, it's going to happen. You know, but that's not the case. And look, Rogelio Funes Mori, to his credit, a lot of pressure on him this Gold Cup. A lot of pressure, even before he even kicked the ball, put the jersey on. And he's been responding. Forget about the goals for a second. He's got 3 goals this Gold Cup. The play. The actual play from him has been outstanding.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, let's get into that then. So Rogelio Funes Mori first on our list of Mexican players. Have they impressed or not throughout the Gold Cup? Based on what you just said, Herc, I think Rogelio Funes Mori has impressed you.
Yes. Now, we mentioned Daryl Dike. When he's not scoring goals, what can you be doing? Well, when Rogelio Funes Mori is not scoring goals, and even when he is scoring goals, he is putting dimes on a platter. He is serving up for his teammates, whether it's Tecatito Corona, Orbelín Pineda, when it was Chucky Lozano when he was playing, and the list goes on and on and on. Eric Gutierrez, I don't know how many he's missed from this player. He's a very good 9, very dynamic, very good at reading plays, good to goal with the back to goal, great in the box. But he's the 9 that, when he's not scoring goals, is still doing something for you. And listen, since Raul Jimenez, you've not had that type of 9. You bring in Javier Hernandez, Charito here, he's not going to be that 9 for you. Alan Pulido, he's probably going to be a little deeper, but he's not going to be that complete 9 for you. Henry Martin, definitely not going to be that 9 for you.
Yeah. So Funes Mori has 3 goals so far this tournament. The one thing I like is when they come in that first half hour. And that's when Mexico, like, needs to grab
all
game
winners.
Games. Yeah, they are all game winners because Mexico has yet to concede a goal throughout this tournament. Let's talk Tecatito Corona. This is a player to me who, when I watch him play, I'm always so excited. And maybe to the point now, Herc, where his previous performances have set a bar that now I feel like I'm being let down. What do you think of Tecatito so far in the Gold Cup and specifically against Honduras?
Where is he? Exactly. Where is Tecatito Corona? Mm-hmm. Where is the player that today is being linked with Tottenham Hotspur?
Yeah.
Where is
and
the
Chelsea
player?
And Arsenal and Atletico.
Whatever you want. Where is the player who 2 seasons ago was voted the best player in the Portuguese
Can league? I ask you something? Does he look tired? I feel like
I have that here.
Yeah.
Is he tired? Is he injured? That's literally one of the things I want to ask about Tecatito Corona. One of the reports before the tournament started was that he picked up an injury and that he was a doubt to actually play the Gold Cup.
Yeah, next, he looks leggy.
Yeah. Next thing you know, he's starting and playing every single minute of every single game. I don't know what it is, but this is a player that when he's in his best version, watch out, he's one of the better players in CONCACAF, one of the better 1v1 players you will see anywhere. And we've not seen that version of him. He looks disinterested. He looks unmotivated. He looks tired.
Yep.
I don't know if it's injury. I don't know if it's he's overused, what it is, but it's not the same Tecatito Corona that we've been seeing.
I hate to hear you say that word overuse, because that makes me very worried for the upcoming season for him. If all these links are true and he is going to make a move, we're looking at a guy who's tired already. Imagine in August, September with his club team. I mean, that's going to get even worse.
Seb, think about it. You've got the Portuguese Cup, you've got Portuguese League, you got Champions League, you know, you got all these tournaments. Then he comes into a preseason where, by the way, you know how many preparation games the U.S. men's national team played for the Gold Cup?
How many?
Zero. Zero. It seems like every single week there was an opportunity. Mexico played a game because we want to make that money at the gate. And
Fair
he was
enough.
There.
All right, let's talk about another midfielder, Jonathan Dos Santos. What a sweet strike against Honduras for the second Mexican goal in this match. Herc, is he performing or underperforming in your eyes?
Oh, no, my man's performing.
Yeah.
I still remember 2019, around that time, when people outlandishly were claiming that Charlie Rodriguez was the next big thing, and then Jonathan Dos Santos, who? He's out. And all of a sudden, you see Jonathan Dos Santos start for Tata Martino, who Tata Martino knows extremely well from his time in La Liga. And he scores the game winner against the U.S. men's national team in a game where they probably should have been down against that U.S. men's national team. That final.
You're talking 19 Gold Cup final.
19 Gold Cup final. Scores the game winner. He's playing extremely well. Now, Jonathan Dos Santos, when he is healthy, when this man is healthy at his best version, there's nobody that comes close to him. And he's a very vital piece of this national team, the Mexican national team. He's a very good two-way player. He's very cerebral. He's a leader. And all of a sudden, he's got a penchant for coming up big in big moments. Mm. I mean, Gold Cup final winner, this game right here, I mean, you saw the way he just stroked it, put it in the back of the net. This is a gamer. This is a player that I've got a lot of faith in.
How do we explain the difference between what MLS did to Gio Dos Santos and what it did for Jonathan Dos Santos?
Well, there's still time to see if he gets to Gio Dos Santos status, because Gio started off very well in Major League Soccer. Gio was one of the better players for the Galaxy when Robbie Keane was there.
Quick question. Who do you think we will say has a better national team career when it's all said and done?
No, Gio.
Careful, there's still time for Jonah. There's still
not
time
enough
for
time. Gio's one of the best Mexican national team players that's ever played. If you just look at it, just everything he's won.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Speaking of Mexico, they're under-23s, plus three refuerzos, in the Olympics. And how about this? They lose 2-1 against Japan after a 4-1 victory, Herc, against France. This leaves Mexico's qualification for the next round very much in doubt right now. Second in their group behind the Japanese, who have won both of their games. It really, Herc, seemed kind of like two different teams from the opener to the second game. What was the difference?
The first 15 minutes. That was it. I mean, the game was over 50 minutes in. Defensive errors. Eric Aguirre gets beat, you know, in behind. The first goal comes. Sanchez can't close. And then Memo Ochoa is beat. And then the second goal, it's Cesar Montes again. Mm. Another penalty that the center back gives up. And it's the attention to detail, the lack of concentration. And when you go up 2-0, you can go down, 2-0, 15 minutes in at that level against players like Cubo, which the Mexican national team doesn't have a player of that caliber, it's going to be very difficult against the host nation.
Why were they so toothless in this game? Like, how did they threaten France so much and then suddenly go to a team that really could almost not bother Japan until the end of the game when they're playing a man down and in desperation mode?
Right. Well, you have to think about this, Seb. Against France, they were already up a goal. They were up two goals, three goals, four goals, so they can toy with them and toy with the spaces behind because they're a very dynamic team. Versus Japan, they're down two goals in the opening 15 minutes, so Japan could let Mexico have the ball
Japan
and
also
play that way.
Physically superior. I gotta say
they
that.
They were a lot faster.
They were a lot faster.
A lot faster, and not only speed of play, but decision-making a lot faster. And anytime you are faster with the decision making, errors are going to happen. Johan Vasquez has to take down the opponent right outside the box. It's a clear, evident red card. But also, bad individual performances. And this goes to Jaime Lozano as well. The first game, we raved about the substitutions. This last game, I mean, your most dangerous player is probably Alexis Vega again. You take him out again. Right. And this time, there wasn't a clear-cut answer for your move, you know?
So much of an Olympic tournament is the three overage players that you bring in that decision, right? That's really how you build your team. Los refuerzos, as we call them in Spanish. Henry Martin is the guy for this Mexican national team. Like, you brought in a goalie, you brought in Luis Romo, and you brought in a striker. You brought in Henry Martin. Was he the right guy to bring in for this tournament?
Has he ever been the guy at the club level? Has there ever been a club situation for
consistently
him?
Consistently, no.
Tijuana or America, where you're like, the club puts their faith in him. The coach puts their faith in him. He's going to be the goal scorer for this team, and he's a consistent threat? No, because even when he's scoring goals, he's fighting to stay on the field. He's got Viñas behind him. He had Castillo behind him. And Cholos, they always had the next big thing behind, or, you know, breathing down his neck. He's never been the guy at the club level or the national team level.
Right.
You know how many national team goals he scored for El Tri? You know, and he's got less than two. So all of a sudden, you're expecting him to be the guy at one of the biggest stages for Mexico. One of their, you know.
So who do you take instead, right? Because there's a few other options. mean, there's a guy with the LA Galaxy right now. Well, he's not with the LA Galaxy right now. I'd love to see Chicharito at the Olympics. Jota Macias would have been an option and an of-age option.
You could have saved the refuerzo for something else. I would have gone of-age option in JJ Macias or Alexis Vega, who played there in the qualifying tournament in Guadalajara, who did extremely well there, and brought in another position of need. Whether that's in the middle of the park or a center back situation or something like that, I would have gone that route. Certainly, you know, Henry's a very good squad player.
Right.
He's a very good guy.
He's
to
like
have
a comfortable number two choice, right?
And he works hard for you.
Every manager would love to have this player.
But he's certainly not, and I know this is very easy to say, an Andre Pierre Gignac who's going to score a hat trick, you know, in the second game.
Actually, it's a perfect comparison. That's the player France brought in to strengthen their squad. This is the player. I mean, there's a huge gap between
of
those two guys.
There
we can't deny that. All right. So next game for Mexico, South Africa on Wednesday. South Africa team that has not won so far yet in this tournament. How confident are you that Mexico can get the job done? A win and they're through.
Yeah, I'm confident.
Anything else leaves
the
door open.
I know we were talking about a last show of like, hey, they're going to medal now, right? You know.
I know, funny how quickly those change.
But I don't think it's changed too much. Take a look at this for a second, okay? Look at the teams that are in the Olympics on the men's side, okay? Mm-hmm. Name a team that's won two games.
No, only Japan.
Only Japan! Brazil hasn't looked that convincing. Spain hasn't looked that convincing. France certainly hasn't looked that convincing. Germany hasn't looked that convincing. So if you're telling me that Mexico, whether it's one or two in Group B, can't deal and then win that game and potentially have one game and you beat that game, and you're in a situation where you're looking at a podium. Look, very much still in reach, a medal for this Mexican national team, but it's next game.
Yeah.
You know, South Africa is a dangerous team because they have nothing to play for.
Right.
And they're playing against a team that's got the pressure of having something to play for. That said, destiny's in your hands. It's up to you. Win and you're in, and it should be good.
No Johan Vasquez as well for that game against South Africa. That could be a big
and
big
Eric Aguirre who came out injured.
That's
so those
right.
Those are two big absences and a team that if you put Luis Romo there, now Esquivel has to slide into the midfield. And Charlie Rodriguez, who hasn't looked quite convincing in the center of the park, with Cordova, who had one of his worst games in recent history in any uniform I've seen him in. It's not a convincing or a good feeling moment for Jaime Lozano, the coach, you know, knowing that a center back that you trusted is out, and now you have to go with the domino effect.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The U.S. back on track at the Olympics after a 6-1 thrashing of New Zealand on Sunday. Here to break it down with us, Allie Krieger, two-time World Cup champion with the U.S. women's national team. Allie, before we get to the game against New Zealand and the matches against Australia, I just want to start with you. This is the first time the U.S. women's national team has been in a major international tournament without you since 2012. Do you like it? Do you hate it? Like, what's it like watching these games from the outside now?
It is tough. Hi, both of you. It's great to be here. It is tough. Obviously, I want to be there. I want to play. I want to have an impact on the games. And this is the first time I haven't been involved, you know, in a major tournament. So you're right. It's, you know, a bit different. I have a more time on my hands. And I'm more focused, I think, with the Orlando Pride, obviously, this summer. So it's okay. I'm not okay with it. I, you know, disagree with his decision. But no, I'm okay, and I'm enjoying watching the team win at least this last game.
That sounded like a, I'm okay. Everything's fine. I'm okay.
Everything's fine. Let's not talk about it.
Let's talk then about the New Zealand game. A 6-1 win for the U.S. Is this official? Everything's fine. Total bounce back performance. Or is this more, they ran into a really weak opponent? And that's just not a weak opponent in New Zealand, but if we're being honest, Allie, here, an opponent that hadn't really, because of COVID-19 restrictions, been able to prepare for this tournament. So is the U.S. officially back and fine, or are there still some concerns coming out of this?
I mean, listen, it's early on in the tournament. Obviously, I think, you know, there's players that aren't necessarily in form, and it's not just one or two. I think that it was a great 3 points, and we needed that win. We needed to build on that confidence, because moving into the next round, especially the next game, is really important for us, and we have to win. And I think that, you know, starting off the tournament not as well, but there's still plenty of time, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to get in form, you know, later on in the next few games.
So we saw the U.S. women bounce back offensively, but defensively, Ali, you've played on this defensive line. You play with these players. A few mistakes, the goal comes off a mistake that New Zealand capitalizes on. What's going on with the defense? Why are they so shaky?
I trust our back line, and they've performed so well over the years and so solid and confident. So I just think that that lineup was always planned. And I think that, you know, off of these games, they just need to tidy up a few little details, the unforced errors. Obviously, that goal was a mistake, but I know that that wasn't on purpose. And I think that, you know, just kind of going back to the drawing board, they can build confidence off of those goals that they scored anyway. But yes, I mean, moving into the later rounds, that's not going to be acceptable. And we need to tidy it up a bit and show that we are the United States, and we are the team that is wanting to win this gold medal. And we do need to tidy up those unforced errors and just kind of get a little bit more compact and more organized. And that starts from the back.
Well, speaking about starting from the back, next opponent, Australia. Sam Kerr, what's the key to stopping this unbelievable forward? You've known her for many years from playing with her at league play, at club level. What's the key to this?
She's an amazing forward, and she loves to get in between the seams and get in behind off your shoulder. So you have to always know where she is. And even back to goal, they can't let her have the time of day. They need to get right on her. They need to disrupt her as soon as possible, especially when she's back to goal. But always have an idea of where she is. So every player in the back line needs to know, because she does enjoy the game, you know, making those runs in behind and off your shoulder. So the defense needs to always have their head on a swivel and be prepared for her making those runs in behind.
Ali, speaking of forwards and players you know well, Alex Morgan. So she starts the opening match but comes off after 45 minutes, then doesn't start the game against New Zealand. This was a huge surprise to me. What do you make of how Vlatko Andonovski is using Morgan through these first couple games?
Yes, of course, we saw that, you know, she didn't have the best 45 minutes that she's ever had. But that doesn't mean she's not going to be an impact, you know, in the next games coming up. I really feel like as an opponent, I am scared and nervous to play against an Alex Morgan, because when she is in form, she's lethal. And you could see that with that goal against New Zealand, her trigger is so quick. And I think that her placement was excellent. I think she had a direct impact in the game. Once again, it's not just her that hasn't quite gotten into the form that she needs to be in this tournament, but that doesn't say that it's not going to happen this game. So I do think opponents need to be scared. I train against her every single day, and she's one of the best forwards in the world. And so we haven't seen the best yet, but there's still time, and she's going to be an impact in these games coming up.
Ali, we've seen two very different performances from the U.S. women these Olympics. How confident are you in a victory versus Australia tomorrow?
I'm very confident. Obviously, we're playing against our former coach, Tony Gustafsson, who knows our team very well. And a lot of the players in the Australian squad have played in the NWSL and are very familiar with our U.S. team. So that does, you know, play a little bit of an advantage for Australia. But I do think we have a capability of winning again, getting these 3 points. We do have to be aware of Sam Kerr. That is very important for everyone on the field. It's not just the back line, but everyone needs to be prepared and know where she is on the field, because that is their weapon and that is who they're going to be looking for.
Hey, Ali, I got one more question for you, because I think you can give us a good perspective on it. You obviously worked under Jill Ellis for a long time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about the differences between the Jill Ellis era and the Vlatko Andonovski era. What do you think the kind of key differences are between these two coaches and then what we see from their respective national teams?
Yeah, great question. I think that Jill is more of a managerial role. I think she manages the players. And then Tony was more so our trainer, so to speak, and was very detail oriented, which I think that also has a connection with Vlatko, who is also very detail oriented. But Vlatko is more of like a hands-on type head coach. And sometimes you don't see that often. You just see a head coach kind of in that manager role. And then you have your assistants doing the training and getting that work in. So I think that is the biggest difference. And Vlatko is up all night watching video, clipping video, you know, watching training sessions from the start to finish. He is very involved in the training. And I think that was, you know, one of the biggest differences that I've seen and have experienced with both of these coaches.
It's interesting, Allie, we were talking to Vlatko Ananoski after the pandemic, and he was like, yeah, I basically have a master's in soccer now with how much I've studied it. So a very, very interesting manager. Very, very interesting story there. All right, Allie Krieger, we got to let you go. Thanks so much for the time here on Football Americas, and we'll hear from you soon throughout these Olympics.
Yes, thank you both.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
To Major League Soccer, the good, the bad, the ugly. We start with the good. FC Dallas's Ricardo Pepi, a hat trick and a 4-0 win over the LA Galaxy. Herky is now the youngest player ever to score a hat trick in Major League Soccer history. He's got 8 goals so far this season, tied for 3rd in the league, and he is just 18 years old. How special is this kid?
My man just became a starter for FC Dallas. It took Luchi Gonzalez, I don't know how long, to finally give him the reins, make him a number 9. He's got the only designated player, Franco Jara, on the bench. 8 goals on the season. By the way, Bologna, Serie A, they're interested in this guy.
Oh, really? Okay.
Dual national. U.S. men's national team. Mi Selección Mexico, watch out. There could be another bidding war here.
I think there could be. This is right around the time when Mexico is like, oh, we're about to step in, right? He's blowing up. He has been invited to both Mexico and U.S. youth national team camps in the past. And what did you tell me about his bio? He's got both those teams in his social media bio?
Yeah, not the U.S. men's national team. The U.S. youth national team, okay. And Mi Selección in his bio. Ricardo Pepi, eyes on him. He was actually in the 60-man preliminary roster for Greg Berhalter and this Gold Cup team. Did not make it, but he is proving his worth. 8 goals.
I wonder if that's not going to be a motivator for Greg Berhalter to give him a call up to kind of lock him into the United States. Another thing that was super, I think, impressive about this goal, it comes on the year, or the hat trick, we should say. It comes on the year anniversary of his grandfather's death, and he said he dedicated the performance and the goals to him. So the kid obviously like has a sense of time and place and knows how to step up when he needs to. The bigger question here is he the next guy from MLS to make the jump? You mentioned Bologna. It feels like, I mean, when you score a hat trick, all the momentum's going to be behind you, right?
Yeah, I actually called this game for Latin America ESPN, and his movement's tremendous. Mm. The way he finds the game.
You think he's Serie A ready?
As a striker, yes, because you're going to get so many opportunities, and his movement's so good, and if you get in a place where they can value that said movement, I think he'd be a very good player. Is he Serie A ready? Is he Europe ready? Look where he plays, FC Dallas. Look at the type of player that's coming out of FC Dallas. The Weston McKinneys, the Reggie Cannons, the Brian Reynolds, Justin Che, who's being linked, you know, in Germany. The list goes on and on and on. It just seems like this is destined. It's in the cards. Ricardo Pepi is the next one.
You think so? So I think you have to say, all right, well, like, who is he competing with? A couple guys that I think might be, like James Sands right now. We always talk about him having a great Gold Cup. Couldn't he be a guy that could be next to make a move, especially with
Here it is. Here it is. Mm-hmm. He's a forward, Seb. He's a forward. It's so much easier getting on the field as a forward. Somebody will give you an opportunity.
That's how you made a career.
That's how I made a 17-year career, being a forward. If I was a center back or a goalkeeper, wait your turn, son. It's not that easy. You have to prove a lot more. As a forward, they are so much more inclined to take a flyer on you because the upside is so large, so big.
So our good this week came from FC Dallas versus the LA Galaxy. Our bad this week also comes from FC Dallas, LA Galaxy. The other side of the 4-0 score, of course, is the LA Galaxy dropped more points. They are still, Herc, 3rd in the Western Conference, but they've won just 1 of 5 since Chicharito got hurt. How worried should Galaxy fans be right now?
Not too worried. Greg Vanney is a good coach. And listen, take this game and kick it out. Put it in the trash. Ricardo Pepi's goals, no. Why very good goals, were errors.
So why are we going to throw that out? Isn't that a problem
LA should fix? No. But you're missing like five starters and Chicharito Hernandez, who's injured.
Right.
Of those five starters, you've got Sebastian Legette, you've got Jonah Dos Santos, Efrain Alvarez, who could be a starter, could be not. Giancarlo Gonzalez could be a starter, could be not. But you're missing players, important players, on this team, in this team. And everybody knows, you know very well, in Major League Soccer, in these dog days of summer, you can get away with it because Major League Soccer and a schedule is so forgiving.
Yeah. It's not a league built for depth either, right? Like,
right.
The Galaxy are not a team that's going to be able to absorb all of those losses and still compete. They are still third in the West. If you go off points per game, they're fourth in the West, but they're still hanging around. The one thing I would say is if they had any illusions of maybe winning the Western Conference, probably not going to happen. At this point,
Kansas City and Seattle are starting to
pull away.
And a thing to keep an eye on, we talk about these players who are missing. Daniel Starris, looked injured, came out injured in that fourth goal that Dallas scored. Something to keep an eye on. He's one of the most steady defenders, and defending has not really been a forte for the Galaxy over the years.
When Chicharito got hurt, we looked at the Galaxy schedule, and we said it was kind of a soft run. Again, they only won one of the five games in that soft run. Coming up, they got RSL, Colorado, Minnesota, LAFC at the end of next month. All those teams above the playoff line. So if they couldn't hack it without Chicharito now, they need him back. Because that next run is going to be, I think, a lot more difficult.
Absolutely. 10 goals. I mean, he was leading the league, 10 goals for the LA Galaxy. What worries me isn't that he's injured. It's where he's injured. Mm. It seems to be the same injury, same calf that he injured last year that kept him out for over 3 months. How they handle that, how he responds, how he comes back. And if he was great physically, if his fitness was a reason for his success this go around, what is he going to be like that now that he's not game sharp, not game fitness, not in that rhythm? That's something to keep an eye on.
We've seen the good. We've seen the bad. Let's see the ugly, although I think this may be more weird than ugly. I'm not really sure which category this properly fits into. Atlanta ties Columbus 1-1 over the weekend. That's not the story. Kanye West, apparently, because you can't really see if it's him, made an appearance at the match. Kanye, this is what we know. He debuted his new album in Atlanta Stadium on Thursday night, Herc. I know you're all about it. And then he was wearing this outfit while he was debuting his new album there. It's the same one that we see here. And so now we have to obviously assess it with all of our fashionista skills. Is he dripping or is he tripping with
it? Can you clarify? Are you doing the trash bag, the red trash bag? Is that what we're assessing? Or are you doing
Is that a trash bag? That's a jacket, bro.
It's a jacket?
I think so. I mean, you know.
Are we doing
pantyhose
on his face?
Might be a poncho.
What are we doing here?
The whole outfit.
I'm confused. I don't know what I'm more confused at. His attire or the fact that he's living inside a Mercedes-Benz stadium. The fact that that's where he's doing his Adana, the new album, the 10th album. I am so confused with what's going on right now. Why is Kanye West in a soccer stadium? It's not a football stadium. That's not the Falcon Stadium. That's Atlanta United Stadium. They run that town.
A huge win for MLS, though, right? For how hard Major League Soccer sometimes tries to be cool and relevant. Do people still think Kanye West is cool and relevant? I think a lot of people do, right?
I don't know about cool, but relevant.
Relevant,
absolutely.
Super relevant. So to have him, even if it was for 30 seconds in the supporters section, walk in to me is like a major, major win for Major League Soccer. The other thing that's interesting here is there's a report coming out that the Columbus crew actually had to go to another locker room, an auxiliary locker room, because the visiting team locker room still had all of Kanye's crew stuff in it.
That is so back when it was
MLS 1.0.
Right, back
except
when it was
wasn't Kanye. It was some like way
no,
worse.
No, listen.
Band
back when it was the Home Depot Center in LA, now Dignity Health Sports Park. Real Madrid came to play us, and we lost 2-0. After the game, we'd always go to a designated area for the families and you know whatnot, a cocktail area. Couldn't go there because Real Madrid was there. We had to be exited from our own stadium.
Where was your player lounge? You just didn't have a player lounge that day?
What player lounge?
Yeah, nothing.
Come on.
Liga MX getting their apertura kicked off this weekend. One of the big storylines, Chivas loses at home 2-1 against Atletico San Luis on Sunday.
Yeah.
The Chivas goal came from a penalty. Atletico San Luis's goals came from Chivas mistakes. This feels like more of the same from a Chivas team that admittedly, Herc, was missing a lot of its key players.
What is this, Chivas TV? What's going on here?
I'm not making excuses for them, but I mean, they're...
No, we have
to acknowledge the truth.
You're right, but how many new players does Atletico have? 16? I couldn't register four of those players to play against Chivas? Say what you will about Chivas, and I understand Chivas got a lot of players missing. Mm-hmm. JJ Macias is gone. Mm-hmm. He's with Getafe now. You got players at the Olympic Games. You got players at Gold Cup. Players that are missing, I understand they don't have the depth and no reinforcements. But this is much of the same that we've been used to with Chivas.
So when Mexico plays and they get like 70% possession, you're like, it was good. They did their job. You know, Chivas had 70% possession in that game.
Okay.
Did they do their job?
Have they been doing it for 3 years like that?
No, I'm just asking.
Has Mexico been that way
for 3 years? They clearly had possession, but did they create chances
with it? Did I not tell you about San Luis and who they were missing?
Yeah.
I don't understand why you're making excuses for Chivas.
I won't even go down that road. I'm just saying there may have been a better performance than you're leading on, and it is just one match.
Okay, fine. But they got Puebla next, and that's not going to be an easy task.
And not just because you played there.
Because I played there. But this Puebla version, this new Puebla team, Larcamón, is a very difficult team to play against. It's a team that will work you to the ground with 10 men. I actually thought they were better than Monterrey, and they ended up tying that game. I mean, 60 minutes, 10 men, played very well. Now you play against a Chivas team, and if I'm Puebla, if I'm one of those players from Larcamón, the head coach, I see blood in the water. Mm. I smell blood in the water. Mm.
Speaking of blood in the water, Victor Manuel Vucetich, he's known as King Midas in Mexico, right? Because he's got that gold touch. Whatever he touches, he can sort out. He's got a big problem here with Chivas. This is not a good team moving forward. Do you think he survives the season?
No way. Why would you bet on him surviving the season? Listen, this is a team that normally doesn't get into playoffs. The only reason they've gotten into playoffs is because it's been expanded into this playing game, so now 12 teams can get in. You look at since 2018, June 2018, when Matias Almeida left Chivas, you know how many coaches they've gone through?
Yeah.
Six.
Shouldn't they lower their expectations at this point? Like, I understand you say he might be fired.
How dare you?
No, but I mean, what can they expect of him?
If he makes
Liguilla this year, like
Sebastián Salas, how dare you? Chivas is a big club. How dare you?
Okay, so they're gonna make playoffs?
This is Americanista coming out.
No.
What do you think? I'm dumb? Would you want me to bet on that?
I'm trying to reel you in here. No? Okay.
No.
Fair enough. All right, let's get to other managerial news.
All right.
We got a couple managerial debuts. First of all, Piojo Herrera. With Tigres against Cholos, they get a win, 2-1 in TJ. That's the good news, I guess, for managerial debuts. The other side of it is Tuca Ferretti with Juarez, and he loses 3-1 to Toluca. I think that was on Friday night.
Yeah.
So both these managerial debuts went kind of differently. To focus on Tuca for a second, who leaves Tigres, do you think he's, like, regretting this decision to go from, not just to leave Tigres, we kind of knew that was at its end, but to end up, of all places, with Bravos?
I don't know about regret, but if I were him, I would definitely, well, it's too late, but I would have definitely thought about...
you'd have retired.
Hanging him up. Yeah, he's 67 years old, yeah. Seb. He's an historical...
So why do you think he took the job?
I will tell you why. So 67 years old, he's a historical manager in Liga MX. He's coached since 1991 with Pumas, when he started out with Pumas. That's going on 30 years of uninterrupted football as a manager. No team has ever sent him packing. No team has ever said, take a break, you're gone. It's always been his way, and he's been successful. He's got more league titles than most teams. Mm. He's got 7 Liga MX titles. He's coached the national team. He's won Campeones Cup. He's won, you know, CONCACAF Champions League Cups. Whatever you want, he's been there, he's won it, et cetera, et cetera. But the way he exited Tigres left such a sour taste in his mouth. It's almost like he wanted to prove something, not only to everybody else, but himself. Mm. But he goes to Juarez, and it's not exactly a stable situation. It's not a situation where you're going into a team that's going to have, I understand they got some pockets. I understand they got some deep pockets. They're making a run at a few players. But it's not a Pumas that's got some history, a Chivas that has some history. It's not a Cruz Azul that has history and pockets. I don't know why he's doing it except for his ego. It's a situation where you should have been like, I'm going down as one of the best. This should be it. I'm leaving.
Chivas, Bravos. More likely to make Liguilla, which one?
Bravos.
Ooh.
Only because they can...
You weren't very convinced.
No, I will bet on this only because they are...
Producer just said he'll bet on it, so I'll take that bet for producer with you.
Yeah, only I will tell you why.
Wait, that means I'm betting for Chivas? No, yes. I can't wait. I can't do it.
I will tell you why, because you think about who Chivas can go out and get, okay, in an impossible transfer window. Who? Only Mexican players. Who can Juarez go out and get?
Anybody.
Anybody.
Parting... shots and something very near and dear to my heart. All right, so Bethesda Soccer Club is the club that I grew up playing for, right? DC Scores, you know, is an organization that brings soccer into underprivileged elementary schools in DC. Now, they have Scores programs all over the country, but I'm lucky enough to work with the one in Washington, DC. I'm a volunteer assistant coach. Okay, so these two organizations, the club I played for as a kid and the place I coach now, have teamed up to open doors for the kids in Washington, D.C. If you know, Bethesda's kind of in the suburbs. It's a very affluent area. There's a lot of kids with a lot of opportunities there. I think this is going to open doors for those kids, but it's really going to open doors for the kids at D.C. Scores. Super excited. And hey, dude, they have me put on the jersey.
Well done, sir.
Look at that. They were like, we need a model.
Well done, brother.
We need a model.
What stadium was that?
That was Audi Field, home of DC United.
Watch your head.
Yeah, they actually like let me in. I do want to say this. You know who they had there? They had like all the Bethesda Soccer Club alums.
Okay.
So like Andy Sullivan, women's national team player. Chris Odoi-Achim plays for DC United. Kevin Paredes played for Bethesda United.
Good player.
There. And then they had me with no soccer resume. Just lame.
What school did you go to?
Don't worry. We're not talking about it. Westminster College, home of the Titans.
Isn't that where they did dog training?
No, you're such a jerk. I'm not even going to. I'm not.
Hey, reminder, we're on 3 days a week now.
Hey, so before we get out of here, yeah, we got three shows this week. Today, we're back on Wednesday, we're back on Friday, looking ahead to the Gold Cup. Of course, we'll be covering the Olympics as well. What else do we got Wednesday?
Tell them where we're going after.
We got Jonathan Bond of the LA Galaxy joining us on Wednesday. And then Thursday, we head to Vegas. We're doing the show on Friday from your hometown, Las Vegas, ahead of the Gold Cup final. Will it be US-Mexico? We don't know.
If you know, you know.
Who is that?
If you know, you know. King. King.
Nobody knows.
If you know, you know.
Stephen Fry, shout out.
8-Bit. Good stuff.